You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
In 2009, Erk went to the dark side and became a music podcaster. He discovered a wide, wide selection of music. Apart from Dozy Do by Julie the Band, it's now 2010 and Erk comes down the pipe and into your ears. Bigger, stronger and faster. Every Friday, it's Erk FM time. Now here's your host of Erk FM from Channel Erk. Here's Erk!
G'day, I'm Erk, and welcome to Erk FM episode 85. Usually, Erk FM comes down the pipe and into your ears at the end of each week with a variety of pod-safe and independent music. But on Tuesdays lately, we've been interviewing a lot of different independent artists that we've had on Erk FM before. Now, this week, we are joined in the Channel Erk studio by Judy, who's the host of Judy's Blast FM, and also my mum. Hello.
Hi, everybody.
How are you going?
Good.
And on the line, we have all the way from Boise in Idaho, not Tigger from Boise and beyond, but we have Audra Connolly from, she's a singer and she's a songwriter, and we're going to talk to her now and find out about her singing and songwriting. G'day, Audra.
Hello.
How are you and how's the weather in Boise, Idaho?
I'm wonderful and the weather is beautiful. For now.
You've had no snow?
There's snow on the mountains, but in the down in town it's just sunny and blue skies, big puffy clouds.
That's good.
So tell us, Audra, how did you find us in the first place? I think that's a bit of an interesting story.
Yeah.
I was just researching ways to get my, you know, my album out there, and I don't remember specifically, but I came upon, you know, podcasting, and then I think I got on the Podcasters Association website, and they had a listing of all these different podcasts. I think that's how I found you guys, and just started sending out emails, and you guys got back to me, and couple others, so yeah, that's how I found you.
So how does it feel? I know you actually went back and listened to both my show that I featured a song and Judy who featured the whole album. What does it feel like to sit back and listen to your music on someone's podcast? What does that feel like?
It's really fun. It's really fun to hear what the hosts may have to say about it. It's an honor, you know, when you send your music out and you get a good response back. So it's really fun and inspiring, I guess.
So we'll go back to the past, and the past is Judy's specialty. So I'll let Judy ask a bit about your past and how you got interested in the music in the first place.
On your bio, it says here that you were four when you started classical music. So yes. How did you come across that?
Well, that was my mother. Mm-hmm. She just signed me up for musical kindergarten, which was just this little group that I went to. I believe it was just once a week.
All right.
And you go and you just, you know, there's lots of other little kids and you, you're not really at the piano yet. You just do lots of musical fun activities. And I remember they had a keyboard that was, you know, on the floor. It was a giant keyboard that you could step on with your feet. So you could learn the names of the keys. And we had a little bit of piano playing, but mostly just music like that. And then right after musical kindergarten, I just started taking private lessons once a week. And I remember one recital. I mean, recitals when you're little are just, you think you're going to die. You just think you're going to, you know, you don't know how you're going to get through it. But I remember coming home one time and telling my mother, it doesn't matter how much I fight you for practicing or anything, I don't want you to ever let me quit playing music or quit playing the piano. So it just was something that I was given when I was really young, and I'm really thankful for, because it's just such a huge part of my life. So,
And what made you go from playing the piano over to guitar?
I don't know. Well, you know, piano lessons was just what I always did. And there had always been a guitar around my house, whether it was in the case, in the closet, or whether it was out and my brother played, or even my mom played a little bit. And when I was very little, my dad would play and I would sing with him. So there was always a guitar around. So I knew a couple of chords and, you know, always was fascinated with it and loved, you know, popular guitar players and everything. And went through college and got my piano degree and had bought a guitar in high school because I worked at a music store, you know, just thinking a guitar will be a good thing to have around, you know. And I think I was done with college. I was trying to figure out my next step, and I've always been a very career-oriented person, and just kind of started playing around with it one day and wrote a song. And then, you know, it was like, wow, this is... I've always tried to find a way to be an actual artist. You know, I took visual art. I have been involved in music. I was in dance for a little while. You know, I've always enjoyed art, but never had the composition, my own original composition. And when I wrote that song, it was like, whoa.
And what was this?
You know, this is it. Like, this is my art. This is what I can, you know. And then it just says, and I've written a couple things at the piano, but it's not like the way I approach it at the guitar. So,
and what was the name of
the first
song?
Just inevitable that I became a guitar player. So,
before we get onto the guitar, tell us a little bit about studying piano. How did that come about, and what did you have to do?
You mean as far as college, or just...
Yeah, with college.
Well, it was one of those things when I was in high school, you know, and you're getting closer and closer to being done, and I had always taken private lessons, and it was something that was completely separate from school, you know, so as I thought about it and going away to college or just going to college, you know, I wouldn't have those lessons anymore. And I remember thinking, well, I don't ever want to stop taking lessons. And I just feel really lucky that I have been able to make the right choices, because it's just, you know, it's just what I happened to do. And I was looking for the right college and the right teacher, because when you study music in college, you want to not only go to the right school, but you want to find the right teacher. That's such a big part of learning music. And talked to several professors around the country who said, you have an amazing professor of piano right there in Boise. You should just go there. And that's what I ended up doing. And so, you know, it's just kind of was the next step, I guess. And
did you ever think that maybe you would have turned out to be a famous piano concert?
I wanted to be... The thing about classical music is, you probably know by a very young age if you're going to be a traveling, touring classical musician, you know, that margin of musicians that are that good is so small. But my teacher in college travels around and is an amazing performer and also an amazing teacher. And my plan was to go and get a degree in piano performance, which is what I did, and then continue and get a master's and a doctorate also and teach at the college level, because you can then, you know, teach at that high, high level of musicianship, but you can also take a month off and tour and, you know, play classical music. So, yes, I did want to be a performing classical musician.
And do you have a piano in your own home now?
I don't have a piano. I have a full-size keyboard that's fully weighted, but...
So when you're doing a gig, if you don't want to play guitar, you can actually pull it out and play that as well.
Yes, but I usually don't bring it with me. Really? All my, most of my, the bulk of my songs have been written at the guitar, so I stick with that for now.
I've noticed over the time, found quite on Facebook and that, there's quite a few young college groups coming around now, and they all get together and they're forming bands and groups, and they've got some pretty good sounds coming out around the place too.
Around Boise?
In general.
In general, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always tons of good music out there.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about being a part of a band, or have you always been solo?
I've always been solo, and I think one thing that has led to that is my solo piano, you know, beginnings, just learning that solo music. I mean, there's an amazing amount of repertoire for the classical piano, solo classical piano, and I just always really focused on that. You know, I'd have people that wanted me to accompany them, and
plus, I know that because you sort of categorize yourself as a folk singer, so right. I think it'd be a bit hard to sort of have a group to blend in. You know, right. You've got a very sweet voice, so yeah. I think, you know, to get someone, I think I'm thinking a lot here, but I could picture you like with a big slap bass behind you. Have you ever thought of that?
Well, you know, I see it. I mean, there's a band. You know, there's part of being a band, and then there's being a solo artist with a band. And I definitely want a band one day who wants to play my music, but I'm the arranger, and I'm the, you know, I'm the leader, and I'm the, you know, I mean, I don't mean to be so...
You're not a Leo, are you?
No, I'm not.
You sound like a Leo.
I don't mean to be so centric, but, you know, it's, like I said, it's my art, and so and there are definitely bass players and drummers out there that are willing to go out and play, obviously, other people's music. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't be bass players and drummers. But so, yes, I do want a band one day, but I don't ever really see myself being in a collaborating band. I mean, I shouldn't say that I don't ever, because I don't want to close doors, but
never say
my idea right now is to, you know, be the songwriter and, yes, have a band, but...
So when did you learn guitar?
Well, like I said, I just always had one around my whole life. And to be honest, I've never taken any lessons. I don't play standard guitar the way people do. You know, like what I do is I play in a lot of alternate tunings. Some other alternate tuners, Joni Mitchell, Ani DiFranco, Nick Drake, and a plethora of others, but those are like my main influences. They're all people who tune the guitar differently than the standard tuning. Mm. So I've basically taught myself to play. I never took any lessons, and I've, you know, created my own way of writing. And
So virtually you play by ear.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah. It's a nice thing, too, because with piano I always had music put in front of me. You know, I could have just taken the initiative and started writing, but I had always had this amazing music to play and learn, you know, that was written out in front of me. And with the guitar, I've never had that. I just use my ear and I make it sound the way I want it to sound. So
with your songwriting, do you play, like when you're going to write a new song, do you try it on the piano or do you just do it on the guitar?
No, just the guitar. Usually what I do is I find a tuning that it's either a tuning I've already used that I'm like, there's got to be more to this, or I'll find a brand new tuning or make up my own new tuning, you know, and that I just love, and then find some chords, you know, and start picking, you know, putting it all together, pulling it apart, putting it together, seeing what I come up with. And then either the words come, you know, to that music, or I end up going back to some words I've already written that end up kind of fitting really well. So
do you sort of like pick the words to something in life or something that's happened to you or people around you? Or because I know with your songs, they're all sort of talking about youth, love, features like eyes, that sort of thing, friendship. So it seems to be sort of to the heart. Wouldn't it be more music sort of like related around your heart, your feelings of the heart?
Yes. It's I try to overall, you know, touch on things that lots of people can identify with. I mean, I try to, from the first, you know, be true to myself and be who I am and write about things I'm feeling about and things I'm experiencing. But I try to keep in mind a kind of a universal idea so that others can, you know, get something out of it. I mean, I guess when it comes down to it, I write what I want to write, of course. But I try to have those life lessons in there, those things that, you know, those universal truths, so that it, you know, will ring true for lots of people. And I mean, when you write a song, you have to be willing to understand that somebody's going to hear it. And if they, you know, whether they like it or not, they're going to
relate to it,
the way they hear it. Mm. And they're going to, you know, make the story out of it in their own head.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you ever thought about sort of not just calling yourself a folk singer, but what about a country blues? Because that's very much into that sort of category as well. You could, like, a lot of entertainers just don't go under the one genre nowadays. They, you know, even the top ones like Dolly Parton and all them, they go under more than, and that way then they can sort of go to and fit into different places. Have you ever thought of sort of saying, you're not just a folk singer? You could class yourself as a country singer because of how country artists like you use your music to express feelings and things.
That's funny you say that. I don't really think of myself as having country influences. I guess why I identify as a folk singer is because I
you sing on your
you
own.
You know, folk music has that. I don't know what I'm trying to say exactly, but it just kind of has that message and that, you know, that kind of songs for people, everyday people that, you know, like I was saying, that has a universal message to it. I understand, you know, identifying with more than one genre because you don't want to limit yourself. And I'm the last person to limit myself. I don't want to limit myself by saying I'm a folk singer, but I think that my music and all of its influences, country, rock, whatever they may be, will come through in the music, you know. Yeah. I'm a funny person because I like to stay outside of that box and think outside that box and test people all the time. Mm. But then I'll identify myself as a folk singer, you know. So it's
it's just individual. You know, you're just an individual person, and you sound like you're a very strong-willed person as well, you know, which will get you a long way, because a lot of people are airy-fairy and they don't really know what they want, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I'll do that just to keep everybody else happy. Right. And you know what you want, you know what you're going to do, and you know where you're going to go. So well, you will. You've got that determination that you will do, you know, you will succeed.
Thank you.
You know, I think you've got a lovely voice. And you've got that talent of being able to write your songs as well, you know, which is usually a lot of singers can't write words, and they sing that's why they sing other people's songs.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. So when you actually do a show, do you sing just your own songs, or do you put other people's songs in as well?
Every once in a while I will slip a Joni Mitchell tune or a Neil Young tune or a Stevie Nicks tune in, but I'll even do a couple Ani DiFranco tunes, but for the most part I play my own songs.
Mm. But it is good sometimes because you go to a place where people don't know you, and I found this from experiences myself when I used to be with bands. You get a band up there and all they do is sing their own stuff. And the audience, if they don't know them, they'll think, well, what are they singing about? Because people like to sit there and have a drink and a chat, and they also like to be able to sing along with the words.
Right.
And sometimes if they don't know the songs, they just sort of switch off from the singer and they do their own thing.
Right.
You know? So, but if you're at the same venue all the time, it's a different story, because then you start to build up the audience and people will start to follow you. and say, right. "Well, I like her. Oh, I love that song, like your friend, dear friend song." Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. that to me strikes home because you know it's personal, and you sort of say, you know, you like I sort of say, "Well, I'm writing a letter to a good friend," and you say, "Dear friend," you know, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you're in at a venue. Do you go to one more often? Do you start noticing people are starting to know your music and they start requesting your songs?
Have you yes, had that? I am having that happening right now, actually. I've been playing at this one club here in Boise for a long time. It's, you know, the atmosphere there is very liberal, you know, open-minded, art-based, you know, art-centric.
Mm.
And I've been playing there now for, you know, a couple of years, and yes,
they know you.
I'm starting to have a bigger following come down there, and people are saying, people that I know have the album will say, well, this one's my favorite now. This is the one that I can't stop listening to now. And then, you know, it's starting to...
Which is like everybody...
Starting to happen.
Yeah, you relate to the words in the song. I mean, that's typical. Right. You know, you sort of hear that song and it reminds you of something or something you happen to you or someone you know or, you know, that's the whole thing about that sort of music, you know, whereas to me, heavy metal, it's all just a lot of noise and you can't understand a word that they're saying. Right. So how do you relate?
But to people who listen to heavy metal, it might not be about the words, it might be about the guitar.
Oh, yes, I know that, but that's the reason why I don't listen to heavy metal. So for that reason, I like to hear the beat and to be able to, you know, bounce a foot to it and whatever, you know. And I also like to, once I know the song, I like to have a bit of, not that I can sing, but I like to pretend I can and sing along with the song as well, you know.
Yes.
And that's why I like country music. And I and also I like folk music. Well, folk also comes under country, pop. What's the other one? Pop rock or what is it? Hop pop or hip hop. I was trying to say. So
are you sure?
Yes, hip hop. So, but all those sort of type of genres are all to me all sort of in a little sort of a circle type of thing. You know, all going around the wagon type of thing. You know, so you can understand the beat, the music, and the words.
So why don't we listen to some beat, music, and words right now? Because I, as much as I like interviewing someone, I like to be able to play their music so you can hear what we're talking about.
So we're going to play now is a lovely song that I really like, and it's called Dear Friend.
Would you like to tell us, Audra, a bit about Dear Friend?
This was the first song I ever wrote. And... I was just kind of going through a time when the little circle of friends that I had was breaking up and moving away and, you know, having fallings out and things like that. And so those were the things that I was meditating on when I wrote this song.
Thank you.
You're listening to IRC FM episode number 85, and that was Dear Friend, and that was a great song. We'll feature a couple of more songs during the interview, but one thing that I wanted to ask you about now, Audra, was in relation to your songwriting. And do you sit down at specific times and do you write songs at a specific time, or do you wait until an idea comes into your head?
Well, I think it's more of the second one, but, I don't know. It's kind of a combination of the both. I try, you know, when I'm not playing out a lot, I get a lot more time to just play by myself. And I'll end up, you know, playing through songs that I have already written, and then maybe, you know, as I'm, you know, have been in that for a little while, things will, you know, new things will start to come about. But, I mean, good things can come when you, you know, kind of force the creativity. And that has happened a couple of times when I'm like, I just have to write a song today or to, you know, this week or whatever. Or I've got a gig coming up, I want to write this song before that gig is done. You know, I mean, really good things can come out of that. But I think good things come out of just kind of waiting for it to flow out too. So I have a lot of different ways of writing.
So if you're out and about, or say it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you get a really great idea, how do you document that so you can work on it later?
If I'm out and about, or it's, you know, whatever time, and I come up with an idea, it's usually lyrics, you know, something along the line of lyrics. I have ideas about music, but usually those things come about when I'm actually playing. I just try to file it away as, you know, as concrete as I can so that I can come back to it later. I'm sure there's a lot of really good ideas that have slipped away, so...
Do you write things down or do you record them? A lot of bands that I've spoken to have got like a dictaphone, or they've got a mobile phone that they'll record their lyrics in so they can work on it later.
I've tried that. I'm just not on top of it enough. You know, I mean, I've tried recording, you know, having a little recording device with me, but I just try to write it down if it's really good, and if it's really, really good, I just say it over and over in my head until until I get home and can, you know, put it in somewhere. I also have a journal, you know, that I write in pretty regularly, and I usually get a lot of you know, the day's ideas out in that. So, mm-hmm.
And what about, you've got an independent label, Heart and Soul Records.
Who's Whole Heart Records.
Yeah, Whole Heart, sorry. Who does that belong to?
That's me. That's you. Mine.
So how did you get the name?
It's so cheesy, but...
Come on, tell us, share.
It's the perfect reflection of me, because there's this little dark side of me and then there's this super cheesy part of me. So that's where this comes from. It's, you know, I believe there's a hole in everyone's heart that we're trying to fill with things, your job or your partner or your family or your pet or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. Everybody fills it with different things. So that's where the whole comes from. And then the whole heart is that I, like you said earlier, I write from my heart, you know, and I pretty much do most things that mean anything to me wholeheartedly. So it's kind of a play on words and a...
You sound a very compassionate person.
I try.
Yeah. And on your website, which is www.audreyconnolly.com, you have a photo of yourself up in the corner behind all these rocks. Where was that taken at?
That is southern Idaho, in the Owyhee Mountains.
Oh. I've got a thing about
high
rocks.
Desert.
It's not a bad shot, that. It's a shame you weren't a little bit closer to the camera, but you're leaving people in suspense, are you?
Yes, exactly.
So
have you ever thought of moving from Boise, or is that where you're going to stay for the rest of your life?
Oh, I really would like to move somewhere else at some point, but I also love Boise. Boise is a really good place to be based. It's not super expensive to live here. I do have a lot of my family here, and my, you know, piano students and everything, but... I thought about moving to Austin for a little bit, and I thought about moving to Portland because it's not far away, but I just kind of going to see where the road takes me. Boise's a really good place for me right now because I record here, I, you know, have support system here, and it's pretty easy to get around the western part of the country from here. So
you can always travel and come home anyway. That's
right,
the best way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what's the live music scene like there?
In Boise?
Yeah.
It's very interesting. It's funny you ask me that. I don't have another, being a local musician in another town to compare it to. So this is what I see as an original artist, you know, in Boise, is that there is quite a scene for that cover music, and I know that that happens in every town, but Boise's kind of taken over by it. The bars perpetuate it, the people that go to the bars perpetuate it, and therefore the bands perpetuate it. And I don't mean original artists, I mean bands that only do covers. So on the weekends, you know, it's virtually impossible to be an original artist and, you know, have a pretty good show, because everybody's down the street where the band with the that's playing the covers is. So, but at the same time, there's also a lot of really cool, liberal, open-minded, progressive people here that are looking for indie music and are looking for original music, and that's why I do play at that one bar I was telling you about before, because of that. So it's tough. I think it's probably tough everywhere, but it's pretty tough in this town.
You can give it a plug. We don't mind.
Oh, Terrapin Station. That's where that's my little home bar. So,
right. So what we're going to do, we're going to play another song that you wrote. And can you tell us about this song? It's called Friendship.
There's actually a really sad story about it. Would you like to hear that?
Yeah,
go for it.
Right at the time when I had first started writing, and I had probably 9 or 10 songs, I was working at a restaurant, and they did live music in the summers, and the manager's brothers were a couple of musicians that played there. So I became pretty good friends with them just from working there and hearing them play. And they were the ones that let me get up and, you know, play during their set breaks for the first time, my own songs. And so it was really fun. And I, you know, was really close friends with one of the manager's brothers, and he was quite a bit older than me. So he was like a mentor kind of a person to me. And, he was my father's age. And, so I, you know, I never had any feelings for him. And one day he told me how he did. And it really was, I felt very betrayed by it because, you know, that wasn't what our friendship was based on. And then it had turned into this thing. So that happened. And then, that's where the writing of the song came. And the sad part is that he moved away not long after that, and we didn't talk, and then he passed away.
Yeah, that's not good.
So it's very sad, but it's I songs are funny that way because you can, they can evolve and they can change into other things, and so there is a, I don't have any regrets. I'm not holding anything in.
No.
I know that, you know, things have gone the way they need to be, and I'm sure there's no hard feelings. And all of that kind of stuff, have, you know, with him having passed away, but, but it's just kind of a weird thing, you know. I don't know if I really needed to tell that, but
At the time, it's a really bad thing, but you've got a positive out of it in song material.
That's right,
right.
And everything happens for a reason.
Yes.
So
yes.
You can always, you know, put that down to as a lesson in life.
Yes.
You know. So yeah. I think we've all had something there somewhere along the line, especially us girls being infatuated with an older man or something. So, you know.
So here it is.
Yeah.
just having a look through your website, and you've taken a trip to Mexico, which was one place that I didn't get to go to in my epic adventure around America in 2009. Tell us a little bit about Mexico.
Oh, I love Mexico. If there was, to kind of answer the question before, if I could move somewhere that, you know, I could just have a simple life and everything, I would probably move to Mexico. But I went on a yoga trip with my yoga group and my yoga teachers, and we just stayed there for 10 days and ate amazing whole local food every day. And we were in this place called Bacalar, which is about 5 hours south of Cancun, really close to the border with Belize. So it was amazing. I loved it. I want to go back.
So you reckon Mexico is a pretty safe place to go?
Oh, yes.
Oh, because, you know, yes. Like when Irk was in America last year, he actually stayed in Boise with our friend Laurel from Boise and Beyond, and went all around Boise. But he was going to go as part of his tour was to Mexico. But when that, swine flu, they closed the border off sort of thing. And I sort of, what I heard and what I see on TV, I'm kind of, don't go to Mexico, it's too dangerous. Don't go to Mexico, you know.
Well, I guess so. There has been some political things going on there, you know, and I don't know much about that. And I'm sure you wouldn't want to be caught up in the middle of that. And
So they said to him,
well, we were, I feel like we were so out in the country area that I don't think.
What I'm going on is, but what I've never been out of Australia, but what I'm going on about is, like they show on TV, they have all the big gangs and the drugs and all that sort of thing. And like with the hire car that he had, he wasn't allowed to take it into Mexico. They said he'd have to leave it, outside. And because of, you know, with all the things
insurance
going on,
and
insurance and whatever. So when the swine flu hit, I was so relieved because he says, I'm not going to Mexico now. And I'm going, great, 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 you know. So that's one part of the tour that he never got the chance to go to, you know.
Well, I felt safe the whole time I was there. And
but I think it's no matter where.
No, they tell you don't drink the water, which of course you don't want to do that. And they tell you to be really careful about eating local food because, you know, I mean like street vendor food and stuff like that because of, you know, the different enzymes and things that they're used to that we're not. And that's the only reason. But as far as all that political stuff, I know that for a little while it was dangerous, but where I was so... it was in, I think it was early 2008 I was there. Out in the country and, far from,
anywhere you go. I mean, you go up the corner and get mugged, so it doesn't really matter, does it?
Right.
So,
tell us a little bit about the frog photo that I'm looking at.
Oh, yeah, we had frogs in our, frogs and geckos and all kinds of little creatures in our casitas. That was actually my neighbor's, in my neighbor's casita, but and they just picked him up and put him on a plate. They were really cute. It was cool.
I thought he might have just wandered on to there.
No, they picked him up to put him outside.
So can you tell us, we're going to take the show out with a song called Love Unconditional. So how did you get the name for this song and what made you write the words for it?
On this song, I was meditating about the relationship between humans and animals. I don't know if you guys have pets, but...
Yes, I got a dog.
Yes, so I'm sure you understand. Yes. You know, it's an interesting relationship, that whole they love you no matter what, and they are there by your side all the time, and they've bonded with you, and they... You know, they look to you for answers and they can't talk to you, but you know what they're thinking. And, you know, just all of those amazing things that happen. And I was really happy when the song was done because it wasn't.
So what did you relate it to, a dog or
really
something?
Really cheesy, you know, it was very, just kind of heartfelt. It was exactly what I wanted it to be.
And what was it about, a dog?
A pet? Well, I'd had pets my whole life. I grew up with cats and dogs, ducks and llamas and, everything. And then, but at the time, I had a pet mouse just because I couldn't have cats and dogs and stuff, but I had a pet mouse at the time. So I was looking at the little mouse going, what do we got here, But it includes that relationship with your dog or your cat or your bird or your snake, whatever.
Well, I've had horses. I've been around horses all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of understand the body language of a horse. And at the moment I've got a blue cattle dog. And she's just my wholehearted companion, she's in next to me wherever I am, she is, she goes out of the night to sleep outside in the cool, but otherwise she's like she's laying on the floor behind me now. But I can totally understand where you're coming from, because I always say you don't have to dress up for your animal. As long as you feed them and give them love, they right. do the same back to you. I mean, they don't feed you, but they give you love, and they're a companion, and you know that they'll always be there, and they never judge you.
Right.
So I can totally understand where you're coming from. And, anyone that doesn't like it, some kind of an animal, they've got to have something wrong with them as far as I'm concerned. My attitude is with an animal, no matter what it is, you let them come to you and they can tell whether you will accept them or not. I never force myself onto any kind of animal. I always let them come to me, whether it's a dog, cat, whatever. Some people try to force their pets onto you when you go to visit and that. I don't believe in that. So what I do is, with an animal, I just sort of say, let them come to me. And you find in the end, if they don't jump or look, that's how I got my dog. She was a rescue dog, and she came to me, and she was all over me like a leech, and we just bonded as soon as we met each other. Mm-hmm. And I can totally understand such a beautiful song as this, you can relate to an animal, because like you said, they can't talk, they can't tell you when they're sick, they can't tell you when they're hungry. What's wrong? Like my dog, I can look at her and just her eyes, and she does pull funny faces with the mouth and things, and you can tell. Even the tail, the different ways they wag their tail or whatever, it does. So, you can read them.
Yeah.
So I can thoroughly relate to this song.
So here it is.
Size. You are giving of nothing but
You're listening to episode 85 of IRC FM. And Audra, you've released your first CD, Dear Friend. How did that come about?
How do you mean?
You wanted to write it. You wanted to put out a CD, and did you work on the order of the songs? Was there any special meaning about the way that you've arranged the songs in the album?
I'm not sure how to answer. Let me just go back a little bit. I started writing songs and then had the idea to maybe put out an EP for a while. And I just finally, I wanted to do it right. And I, asked this friend of mine who's a nationally touring artist here in the States, and he recommended this studio here in Boise, and he was right. They're the best, and it just turned into a really amazing album with lots of good experiences and learning experiences. And I had one order of songs set out, and some other professional people that I, trust had said something like, well, you might want to put some, the more upbeat ones a little bit earlier on the album. And, it took a little bit of finagling, this order, but, I kind of wanted there to be a flow of ideas and a flow of, tempos and all of that. So,
yeah, I could totally understand where you're coming from then, because I know when I select my music, even though you may have your CD out, like you said, in a certain range, I listen to every single song all the way through. And how I'm feeling, I write them down in the sequence that I like, because I like the flow. Like you said, you like the flow. It doesn't matter whether it's up-tempo, down-tempo, whatever. And it's how that song, like when I did your show, I put Eternal Youth first. I can't remember how you have them in order now, but I picked that to start with. And then sort of as we went along, I sort of like put the songs to sort of flow along with the story and that sort of thing. And that's how I picked. I don't just go, oh, that's her song, and I write them down in how you've got them on the. Sometimes it must get a bit of a, when he's actually downloading them to put them on the show, he has to sometimes jump all over the place, because I mix them up into how I feel. And so I can see where you're coming from there as far as your songs. Like, like your favourite song you said was Dear Friend. Well, you're not going to put that at the start. So I've got it sort of halfway in the show, because I could relate to that song, So I can see where you're coming from as far as putting them on your album. It's not what other people think. If it was me, I'd be like you. I'd want them done my way, because I wrote those songs, and they have a particular reason why you like that song. And also, I think in the way that you put the song on the CD is how you feel.
Yeah. Eternal Youth actually is the first song on the album, and I'll just tell you this little story really quick. Eternal Youth actually wasn't even supposed to be on the album in the first place. I had written, I had taken three Robert Frost poems and set them to music, and I had recorded those three songs and planned on them being on the album, and I couldn't ever get permission. I couldn't get in touch with the estate of Robert Frost. I couldn't get in touch with anybody except the publisher, and they just sent me a general letter that said musicians aren't allowed to use anything that's not in the public domain. So then I ended up having to go back in, and I recorded Eternal Youth and Loudly Rings and what was the other one?
Diversions?
Meet You There.
Oh, right, yeah.
So,
When it came to the album, how long did the album take to produce?
I started it in September of 2007. And it was done in about, March or so of 2009. So, and then it came out in August of 09. So really 2 years from start to finish, from start to release. Mm.
So it was a long process then.
And do you have any more in the pipeline?
Yes. Yes, so, I'm making plans for to start the second album this fall. So.
All right. So maybe we'll be able to get a copy for playing on Judy's Blast FM and Irk Pop.
Definitely.
That's great.
So tell us about the difference for you when you're performing in the studio compared to performing live.
Well, all of my training, you know, is in performance, which all centers around you just don't know what's going to happen, you know, and like you have to be prepared for it. And the most important thing is to stay musical and stay, you know, in, you know, keep that moment going. So performing live is different in that you just kind of have to shake off the little mistakes and you have to, you know, you have to make the performance bigger than all of that. And
so just quickly there, when you say make a mistake, when you say, for example, you're playing a song and if you hit the wrong key or bar or whatever, do you have a chuckle to yourself and keep going? Or do you look around the audience and think, oh, I hope nobody picked it?
I think it just depends on the mistake, like...
What about the words?
You know, I'll end up just accidentally hitting the wrong chord on the wrong bar, on the wrong fret, you know, or something, and they just adjust really quick. Mm. And I don't think anybody notices, and I try not to make any...
Big thing about it.
Faces or anything, yeah. But then sometimes I'll forget words, and I can't, you know, like, there's nothing I could do except say, keep playing and just be like, forgot the words, you know.
Just play
so
a bit of music.
It just depends on the mistake, so.
Because I
think that's part of the performance, though, like... Mm. I'm a human being. I'm not going to have a reader up there with words on it spitting them to me. They're my songs. Mm. If I screw up a little bit, that's, you know, it's just part of it. So, and then in the studio is very, it's tedious, but I love it. You know, it's really hard work. You're like concentrating so hard and you're only playing the guitar or you're only singing or you're only, you know, doing one part at a time. Yeah. So it's, it's just a very, I don't mean to use the word stressful because it's not stressful, but it's very, you have to be focused, you know?
Yeah, that's
so,
a better word, yeah.
And you don't have to worry about, I mean, you still have to give that performance, but you don't have to worry about a crowd watching you, so.
Yeah, but some people probably perform these, they're better when they're in, like I've been in studios and I watch, you know, I have actually watched musicians laying down tracks and that. And people just think, oh, yeah, by that, you know, 5 minute, or not even 5 minute, well, usually average is about 2.5 minutes for a song. And yet it could have taken a whole day, 8 hours or something of just constant over and over and over. So people don't realise just how much work goes into cutting a CD.
Yeah.
I do, I appreciate it.
We were working on Blue Eyes. We were working on the lead parts that my brother plays. Mm-hmm. And... we were in there for most of a day working on it. And at the end of the day, the recording engineer turns to me and he's like, do you want to hear it again? And I said, no.
I've had enough.
Yeah. I was like, I've had enough of this song for today.
Sometimes when they play it back, I've noticed you get that way in the end, you pick every little fault.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, like if anyone says they cut a song and one hit, they're a liar.
Right.
Because there's no way in the world, because something always goes wrong.
Right.
So so I totally can see where, you know, where you're coming from. And it is very, very draining in recording a song, you know.
It is. Mm-hmm.
So, but like you said, I got a big buzz out of just being in the sound room with the guy watching everybody do their bit, you know.
Yeah, it's really fun.
It is. It's really exciting, you know, and I think maybe people should see more of it so they can appreciate what a person does do to set down a track.
Right.
Do you find it hard sometimes when you're playing live in between singing and playing the guitar? Do you find yourself concentrating on one to the exclusion of the other?
I don't think so. It's all... it's all one thing, you know, and
comes natural.
Yeah, it's all just, you know, it's all part of the show, I guess is a good way to put it, but
yeah,
so no. I mean, I guess, you know, the vocals are the you know, the part that everybody's going to click onto when I'm singing and playing at the same time, you know, that's the part. So I try to really, 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 really be on that all the time, of course. But it's so, I mean, I'm a performer and I'm so, you know, I have training at it. So I don't even really have to think about it. You know, I step on stage and I'm on stage. And so this is the game and this is how it goes, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so finally, when you're coming up to a live performance, do you have any mental or physical preparations or any superstitions that you follow?
not really, no. I just try to be healthy and I try to be really early so I can be prepared and be ready.
That's a good sign, that. Never leave it to the last minute. I found that out with entertainers. Many of entertainers, you think, oh, they're not going to turn up. And you got, you know, like when I used to do an agency job, you get the pub ringing up saying, they're not here. There's no one here. And you think, oh, no, what's happened? So when we used to go out in our band, we always gave an hour extra because, like, once we got caught with a flat tire. So you never, never know what's going to happen. Right. So it's better to be early than not at all.
And that was back in the day before mobile phones.
We didn't have mobile phones in them days, so you couldn't ring up and say, where are you? You know,
it was just... My brother and I were traveling. We had to drive about 8 hours one day to get to a show in McCall, Idaho, which is like 2.5 hours north of Boise, but we were south of here about 6 hours. So we had to travel all that way, and it was the 4th of July. And when you're in the mountain roads in Idaho, you don't have cell service. So, I mean, we were just, like, so worried we were going to be late and couldn't call the guy. It was kind of a mess. But we got there on time and got set up. But it was still kind of scary.
Yeah, but it is better to get there early. That's what we always used to do. Get there early, set all the gear up. Then you sit down, have a relax, have a drink, have something to eat, you know.
Yeah.
And so when you do start your show... And not only that, I think the audience, the crowd, whatever you call them, they appreciate seeing you there. I mean, yeah, you can always go around and say hello to people that are following you and stuff like that. It does make it better PA work for you.
Yes.
PR work, I should say. Mm-hmm. So that's about pretty well awesome. Close.
So thanks, Audra, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a very good interview. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you for a change instead of sending emails backwards and forwards.
Yes, this is fun.
It's good to put the voice to the name.
Yes, I've heard both your voices before, but you've never heard mine.
Yeah, that's right. Mystery lady.
Other than singing. Yes. So my speaking voice, I guess.
Yes, that's
right. There is a difference between when some people sing and the actual talking voice, I've noticed. I've noticed that some people... have like a singing voice and then they have their talking voice, which is totally different. Especially for non-US artists. I've found that a lot of artists sing in a US accent, but they might be English, for instance, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've noticed that too, the difference with the singing and the talking.
Me too.
So for our listeners out there that haven't heard Audra on either ERKPod or on my show, you can go back to our website on www.channelearth.com.
I'll put a link to the episodes in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you want to, you can also contact you, Audra, so you can let us know whereabouts would people contact you.
You can write to info@audraconnolly.com.
And if they want to book you?
Same address, I suppose.
No.
They can write the same. They can write the same one.
Right. And what about your CDs? Where can people find your CDs?
If you just get on the website, audraconnolly.com, and go to the store page, you can buy it right there, and then I'll send it out to you.
So I hope everyone's enjoyed the interview. Of course, you can hear me on ERK FM on Fridays. And you can hear Judy on Judy's Blast FM on Sunday. So if you like music, check both of us out. Until next time, I'm Erk.
I'm Judy.
And you have been listening to an excellent interview with Audra Connolly. Thank you, Audra.
Thank you.
And wherever it is that you see us, or more importantly, that you hear us across Channel Irk, good night, Interweb.
Good night, Interweb.
You have been listening to a Channel Irk production. Channel Irk and all five podcasts are licensed under a Creative Commons non-commercial, non-derivative, share-alike license registered in Australia. Music is used with direct permission or under agreements with various music providers. All rights to the music contained within remains with the original rights holder. Some sound effects are sourced from the Free Sound Project under Creative Commons. For more information about Channel Irk, go to www.channelirk.com.